You can see my award-winning climate comedy show Spoilers at a festival near you, provided you live near or are going to McCunclith or Wells comedy festivals. More dates added soon near you, conceivably, who knows what might happen.
And if you are at Mac, come and see ComCom Redacted live at 4 p.m. on the Saturday.
Go to stuartgoldsmith.com and click the very attractive banner image to find out more.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is a podcast from comedianscomedian.com.
This is the Comedians Comedian Podcast. Hello, I'm Stuart Goldsmith. Welcome to the show. And this is another episode recorded live from the Gilded Balloon during the Edinburgh Festival 2013. This is the charming and very passionately engaged Andrew Maxwell.
Yay! Yay, Stuart!
Hey,
yay!
Man.
Yeah! Yay! Yay! Even Jesus had more followers than this. Lovely.
Yeah, well, we've got more digital followers than Jesus. That's not a thing you can say, is it? That's not quite right. Mm. But this.
Let me just hold the microphone like I've been told, like this.
Good lad.
Good.
Thank you.
It's so weird to use a mic in front of this few many people. Few many.
Yeah.
Few many.
One of things.
Me speaking good English. I've just woken up from a nap, ladies and gentlemen, which means I'm confused and randy. Don't look at me like that.
No, that's fine. Do you know what? That's something, and a few other comics that I've had on the show so far have said, is that they've just woken up from a nap. I think I've pitched this so just when people are feeling vulnerable and
just
able to expose themselves on account of being a little bit sweepy.
Yeah. Well, there is that. Well, I'm happy to expose myself to you anyway, Stuart.
Would you? Well, that's probably already happened, hasn't it?
I'd imagine so. Some sort of capacity.
One way or another. So,
look at us, like a two elderly Cuban emigre somewhere in a park in Miami bickering over a chessboard that doesn't exist.
Yeah. And I only got four of those words.
I only said four of them properly. So that's not bad. No socks. I'm fucking out of socks.
You're not wearing socks.
I've got no fucking
Aren't
socks.
Aren't you going to get left? Blisters?
I guess, probably. One of the many outcomes of this. Lack of socks. I brought loads, but they're all fucking gone.
This is good.
It's a minimalist flat. It's hard to lose a sock. But they can't find enough socks. And there's nowhere near here to buy a sock either.
Is there not?
No.
There's a pause now in the recording while I think of places you could buy. No, they're all down on the other way. Socks.
Thinking about socks. Think where? 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 Nicholson Street? Where in Nicholson Street?
Yeah.
A pound shop? Maybe a pound shop. No, bad sock.
Ah, okay. So what you're saying is it's your high standards for socks that have left you sockless.
Oh, God. Listen, I won't wear a sock that hasn't come in at least a set of seven.
That's a mark of quality.
That is.
Good work. So listen, let's start by talking about your show at the moment, Banana Kingdom.
Yes.
Which I saw a couple of nights ago, which I enjoyed very much. How are you enjoying it?
I'm enjoying it. I'm more surprised at how much I'm enjoying performing in a tent.
Okay. Is that the first time you've been inside the other belly?
I've done one night, you know, here and there, but not night after night in a tent, you know, which is how I thought it would be, like, night after night in a tent. Whereas in fact, it's more like, it's a tent.
Okay.
Which I'm pleased with.
Excellent. And what about the show itself? What about the content of the show? Where in the life of this show is this moment? Is it like, is this a new show that you've just started performing for Edinburgh? Is it going on tour after?
It's always for Edinburgh. Like, you know, for me, you know, the Edinburgh Festival is like exams for clowns, you know. It just gives you a punchline in your year, you know, a deadline, I should say. You know, it gives you a reason you have to write new stuff.
Sure.
I mean, there's nothing worse. Like, it just, jokes are weird. Like, even if it's not, there's nothing, no topicality to a joke. Yeah, it could be something about the way dogs do something or something. Mm-hmm. You know, it can be one of your best gags, but with time, it just becomes a little shop-worn. You slightly lose the luster, the magic to the gag, mm-hmm. you know? And you can see that with people who don't put themselves through this process of the Edinburgh Festival, or they don't have another, you know, reason to keep turning over their material.
Sure.
Stuff that with time once was absolute gold, bankers, just...
How long does it take
and
you?
Not that you don't. Nobody wants to get there.
No, absolutely. No, and we're all familiar with actors who have been doing the same brilliant stuff for years and years and years.
And you go, you know. And then there's age as well. Like, you know, we're stuff, whereas, you know, there's certain ways of talking about, I think particularly a male comedian, of talking about his relationships with women, you know?
Okay.
It can be cheeky in your 20s. But sure. If you're saying the same sort of, you're even using the terms like, you know, when you're out on a date, fucker, you're in your 40s.
Yeah, right.
You just look sad.
Yeah.
You know, you shouldn't be on a date. You should be meeting people through a friend.
I was.
do you know what I mean?
That's how it's done. Yeah, absolutely.
You can see guys who were like, oh, this has always worked. And he's still plowing away at this particular routine. With time, you go,
I was very guilty of that. I was very guilty of that recently myself. I was doing some street shows in Adelaide, and you know, I used to be a street performer, and I haven't done it for a long time.
Male prostitute.
I did say street, not strip. That's a frequent misunderstanding.
Yes, I knew that, yeah.
I did some shows in Adelaide, and I couldn't remember my bottling speech. The speech you used to ask for money at the end of the show, and so I sort of fell back into a version from a long time ago, and I said something like, "Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not a student, I'm not on the dole," and I went, "It's been a hell of a long time since I was a student, and no one says dole anymore." So that's really awkward. But
what's
so
it called, a bottling speech?
Bottling, yeah.
Why? Do you know?
I do. We can go into the etymology of it briefly if you promise to get back to the point afterwards.
Yeah.
Well,
I would have thought it was more like a bucket speech.
Well, it's a hatting speech. The process is called either hatting, because you put the money in.
Yeah.
And bottling, I think the original origin of a bottler, and it is contested, is that when you used to, like in kind of origin of Punch and Judy, like Samuel Pepys's time,
right.
The person that was sent round to collect the money round the back of the show would have to catch a fly in a bottle with one hand so that they'd hold it in so they couldn't be taking money out. They would immobilize one hand.
Oh.
So hence it's called bottling.
Wow.
That's true or not, I don't know.
That's what I found out about, you know, when products are 99 pence.
Yeah.
Anything with 99, that is to stop, it's partly a psychological thing, as we know.
Make it seem cheaper.
But
yeah.
It's actually, it's more important, it's with the invention of the till to stop your staff stealing off you.
Is it really?
Because then with every transaction, the till has to be opened and then it's recorded.
Okay.
Give that penny back.
So the people in the pound shop are laughing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Either that or
rife
thieves.
With crime. Yeah. So do you, well, let's talk about this, because you seem to have an interest, as I do, in the minutiae of life. You like interesting facts.
Anything. I'm interested.
Yeah. Well, that's it. I think that's a really good starting point for you. You are interested. You're engaged with the world. And a lot of your material really reflects that, because you're one of those people who I think of as an adventure comic. Like, you go out and have adventures. You know, you've organized a comedy festival in the French Alps. You've done gigs in prison. You did this gig on one night on the Shankill Road and the Falls Road. Of which there's a whole DVD that I've watched. It was an incredible experience. We can talk about that bit more, but. What is it that drives you to go out and have these adventures and turn those into comedy? Which way round does it happen? Do you think, I need some material, I better do some things?
Well, it's not. It's more that, you know, if you weren't a comedian, people would go, no, you can't.
You can't
have a route around our lives.
Sure.
Yeah, who the hell are you? Fuck off. Whereas if you've got some sort of excuse of, well, I'm doing it for a show, they're like, yeah, all right.
Okay.
And, you know, like I said, I'm curious. These are things, you know, there's tons of things I'm curious about. And then you have this sort of, you have the excuse of, well, it's for a show.
Okay. Did you first cotton onto that? When was the first time that you went, oh, if I say I'm doing a show, I can, you know, get involved?
Well, it wasn't even cottoning on. I just, you know, as you sort of, you know, rise, like, you know, in the business, like it's sort of some sort of very slow rising bread over the space of 20 odd years, you know, people, you get a break, you get a chance and, you know, you go for it, you know. I mean, there's like, sometimes there's things that I've done, which are, you know, if it was only just to turn it into stand up, there's some things that I've done are so ludicrous that like, they actually don't, they're no good for comedy.
Okay. Like what? You know?
Well, last year I got arrested at Area 51 in the Nevada desert. Detained is technically what it is, because when you don't get, you can't get arrested by the army.
Okay.
So the American Air Force commando unit detained me and the camera crew in the desert. And it's just such a ridiculous situation. Anytime I try to tell it on stage, one, it sounded like I was bragging.
Sure.
And number two,
because it's got to be rooted in I was there to do a TV show.
Yeah, but yeah. It just sounded like it was exaggeration. It was just, when I tried to tell it on stage, it did. I told lots of other stuff about the UFO. I was making a series for BBC Three called Conspiracy Road Trip, and one of the episodes is about aliens, right? Now, we had just met and I have to say, of all the conspiracists I've met, people who are into aliens are the nicest.
Okay.
They're the funnest. And weirdly, they tend to have a very high proportion of tobacco addiction.
Okay.
People who are into aliens tend to smoke a lot.
Why is that?
Don't know. They had no reason for it, but we met one guy in Sedona, Arizona, who's full-on old hippie dude, and he said that the aliens, they're scared of tobacco smoke.
So okay.
If you're smoking cigarettes, they can actually abduct you. And these people...
That's a very convenient thing to believe if you're also chemically addicted to nicotine.
Yeah, right. But, you know, this is a thing that, you know, a lot of alien punters believe, you know? And they really do believe they will be get kidnapped by space goblins, or, you know.
Okay. So you've tried telling that stuff on stage?
Yeah. No, particularly the actual arrests, you know. We went there, we were, and earlier in the day, Area 51 is deep, deep in the Nevada desert.
Mm-hmm.
Like proper in the fucking middle of nowhere. Like past the desert. there's even less than a desert.
Okay.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's I don't know, about 100 miles north of Vegas. And we had just met earlier in the day. We were, you know, it's a week-long journey. You're interviewing people. You're smashing back and forward with the five conspiracists to run the bus with you, you know, to make an hour show. But you're essentially on, as it were.
Sure.
Talking to these people. Cameras on for, like, you know, all the waking day.
Sure.
At least 15 hours a day. You know, just, I mean, from it's just, you know, in case, we'll see what the hell happens, you know? So we had met a guy earlier in the day who's in each conspiracy theory online, there's all sorts of leading lights, you know? People who make a lot of fucking money out of it. Whatever the theory is, they're making money. They're selling books. They're signing autographs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yourself. I mean, the new technology stuff, you know, but, you know, podcasts and the whole nine yards.
Oh, I make a fortune out of
this.
I can tell.
But this dude is, Lear was his name. I forgot what his first name was. And he maintained, he was former CIA. And he's an alien expert. We go to his house and, oh, fuck me. Some of the guff that he said, he told us that all human children, there's 18 billion people living on the moon.
Okay.
The moon was invented in a factory inside Jupiter and is towed around the universe.
Okay.
In what he could only describe as very large space tractors.
Okay.
And I'm like, this is on camera, just, you're in somebody's house, you know, it's a certain amount of decorum, but I'm like, shut the fuck up, man. But I'm just like, yeah, interesting. And the people I'm with are like, And I was going, why? So how do you know this? Because, well, everybody knows that all human children are abducted at the age of 3, 7, and 13 and taken to the moon. And I was like, why? For how long? At the time, you know, my daughter was 3.
Okay.
You know, I didn't believe in it, but I was still like, I can tell you, my daughter's not going to the moon. Oh, no, it's perfectly harmless and you'll know nothing of it. And then when your child is returned before dawn, they will have no memory of it. You know, it's just sort of, but we got to, it was such an absurd conversation. Oh, there was all sorts of other stuff. They were in Vegas and he was saying that in the kitchens underneath the Bellagio casino, there is a secret door which leads to an underground railway that goes straight to Area 51, right? It's a 100-mile underground railway, like fucking elaborate.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So all this sort of carry on. And we left, and one of the lads, Benny, who's from Durham, really sweet lad, like, just, you know, good lad, like, and he was going, oh, God, I don't know what that makes. That's all fucking crackers, man. I goes, but this is what you believe in. He goes, well, I don't know about that. But you generally believe it.
Yeah.
And with time, I mean, the whole point of conspiracy theories is they're folklore. Yeah. You have to expand. But that's always been the way. But then online, you're in these message boards or in these chat rooms, and da-da-da. If you want to get your voice heard, you've got to. It's almost like that. I went to the shops and a bag of apples. Went to the shops, we bought some apples and pears.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
It
okay.
Has
it
that
gets
expansive,
it stuff accretes over time and
yeah,
it becomes
it
a bigger
has an
story.
Expansive okay. quality, yeah. And I was going, mate, that's your fucking, that's Christmas future, Benny. Mm-hmm. Right? So I got some of them to this point, right? And this guy was going, oh, the Area 51. He goes, everybody knows that the aliens. The Area 51 is a global alien prison. It's where the aliens are kept. And there's a big alien. And he gave it a name like Kung Tang or whatever. And that sounded a lot like Poontang, but whatever. That's what came to mind. Anyway. And he was going, you know, that they're the president, the vice president, and the head of the armed forces. They get to meet them. And I was like, with respect, sir, you've never been any of those. How the fuck do you know?
Sure.
And he had no answer. He goes, I was warned about you. I've been warned.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, you know, it just goes off in the silliness.
Okay.
Again.
So okay.
We went, right, fuck it. We're going to Area 51. Let's do it. Okay. The bus driver was a lovely dude. It was just a local Mormon lad. It was just, this sums it up perfectly. John, the bus driver, we're driving out there. And he was telling me he's been out there loads of times. You know, it's a good fare. You know, you're a Vegas bus driver and you drive from basically London to Birmingham and back to look at it through a metal fence for an hour and then back, you know. So he goes, he wasn't my group, but he was going, he'd been out there with some other UFO punters.
Okay.
Ufologists, okay. By the way. Ufologists is what they call themselves. And he goes, and he told me, John was saying, this guy goes, do you believe they're there, man? Do you? And John was like, no. He goes, well, if there's no aliens here, why do they deny it?
You know, okay.
It is that sort of...
Yeah, sure. Now, listen, I want to sort of pull you back to this because you're obviously a natural storyteller, right? This, this isn't really answering the question, which
right.
is...
I forgot what the question
that's
was.
That's fine. That's clear. That's absolutely fine.
What is the question?
Well, I was talking about how you were talking about trying that material on stage and not being able to get away with it because it's too weird. So we were talking about the experiences that you have in your life and the fact that you tend to go towards unusual situations.
Yeah.
And what I'm interested in finding out is how you do successfully translate an experience into a story on stage. And as much as I'm fascinated in this story, I've seen that episode, so I know a lot of this. But I want to kind of just rugby tackle you and stop you telling stories and find out how you tell stories.
Right.
If you
well,
see
there
what I mean.
Is, well, to be honest, what I noticed after doing that for a couple of years in my shows, now it's more sort of commentary, really, for the last couple of years, shorter bits, you know? There was various stories, the Belfast story, the prison story, you know, there's, you know, the various of them. There was, I agreed to do a gig at an orgy and it was all of them. But what they all had in common was there has to be a certain amount of comeuppance.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Well, what do you mean? Someone...
Well, basically the whole West Belfast project came out of, I'd been making these tourism films in Dublin. I took the London media crew with me to this really cool bar in Belfast called the Duke of York. Right?
Okay.
So it's kind of an arty bar, I suppose you could kind of call in Belfast. And we ended up drinking with this table next to us. We're all, again, sort of, you know, people in their 30s, they were mates and all the rest of it. And my mom's sort of family are from the north, so I'm perfectly happy with hanging out with northerners. You know, a lot of southerners are actually quite spooked by northerners, but not me. And they invited us to a party in an art gallery at the very bottom of the Falls Road, right? We're going, okay, we're not exactly in a, you know, a murder bar or anything like that. And you know, eventually I asked them, what do you do? And they were all Sinn Féin. And they asked me to do a gig for them. And I said, I'd only do a gig for you.
Sure. If they'd arranged you to do another one as well.
And he said, done.
Yeah.
You know, and that's it. Like, I mean, I basically said it to him in the, you know, a polite way to fuck off. No, there's no way I'm doing a gig for one political fucking movement in Northern Ireland.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
But there's always has to be those sort of elements to it, you know?
So when you say an element of comeuppance, do you mean comeuppance for you? There has to be an element in it in which it's you, you're the victim, you're the person that's made a mistake
somehow. Yeah, like victim's too strong, but you know what I mean? That there's a narrative there, you know?
Okay. Well, it's that narrative that I want to talk about. So I've always thought about your persona on stage as being like, almost like a gangster in the back of a bar. Do you know what I mean? I think that's fair. You know, you have a sense that you walk on and you go, I mean, in your show even, you were like, are you with me? And then no one answered, you'd be like, come on, are you with me? Yeah. Like, and you were like a, you know, it's an element of being a rabble rouser and an element of being someone who just seems like you know about the grittier, seamier side of life and you want to tell us about it.
Yeah, I mean, that side of it, you know, I don't come from a criminal background myself. My parents don't swear, my dad plays the organ in church, all the rest of it. But I do come from a very fucking hard part of Dublin.
Sure.
And it just, you know, loads of that stuff, you know, just nobbling horses and fucking stealing vans and just all of that sort of, you know, it was a kind of an Arthur Daly type neighborhood, you know.
Yeah,
what I mean?
Okay.
So it's like all those sort of stories and knowing those kind of things are kind of conversational currency.
They're the
fun thing that men, you know, not just men, but people talk about in Dublin, you know, on the north side.
So how much of your persona on stage is the same as you, the Andrew Maxwell, just sitting here?
The only fucking difference is if I feel like people have paid in to see me do our stand-up, I feel an obligation, like a duty. Like, it's not a bad onus. I'm delighted to it, but to make sure it's fucking funny every 30 seconds.
Sure.
You know, if it's just interesting, that's not what the fuck is on the poster. It's, you know, I would, you know, in some ways I'd like to do a show that was just interesting, but then it would be, I'd feel duty bound to put it in a spoken word section.
Yeah, sure. You know what I mean? But equally, you don't do the other extreme either, which is just like gag, 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 gag. It actually does have that interesting place. It does have that position whereby you are like, you're like taking us into your confidence. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you're going,
so
here's this thing. Here's how I see the world. Here's this story that happened.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just wonder how much, was that what you were always like as a comedian? Was it always a case of you?
I was always like as a child.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's sort of, you know, I mean, my earliest forays into show business were, when I was four, I used to do a leprechaun character called Shawnee McLaughlin, who used to sit at the top of the stairs during family dues and tax people if they wanted to go to the toilet.
So, I can well believe that.
So that's like...
That is not difficult to imagine at all.
Cash in hand, if you want to use the toilet, nobody, like, you know, proper top of the stairs. Four, I realised that, you know what I mean? A lot of elderly relatives were quite vulnerable at the top of the stairs.
So this is Andrew. And as you'll have heard, he's got an approach to joke writing that would make most comics green with envy. Another great example of an act just following their instinct and making the rules up as they go along. And he's just so easy to get along with and so open. If you haven't seen him yet, you've got absolutely no excuse. A very quick hello to Neil Turton. I'm just going to do a quick blurb this time. We'll bash straight through this. But hello to Neil. He is a non-comedian listener, my favourite, as you know, who discovered the show through a recent appearance I did on Carl Donnelly and Chris Martin's podcast, which you can find at soundcloud.com/Carl and Chris. Do go give them a listen. I had a lot of fun on that, and they've got brilliant guests all over the place. No tedious process stuff like we're doing, just people being funny. Carl, you'll remember from an early episode of this show, he's the suede-hooved waffler, and Chris is a very funny and irritatingly telegenic man. So check that out. Thanks to Neil for donating to the show, and of course you can too. I want to thank all of you for your donations. I think I hit a chord the other week when I mentioned the ruinous costs of the live Edinburgh shows. I really truly appreciate you rallying round to support the show. I'm very moved, so thank you everyone for that. You can donate at comedianscomedian.com by hitting the donate button and entering any figure you like. I've had a couple of donations in the realm of £50 and then one for £51, and I thought it was people trying to one-up other listeners until I realised that obviously people have been very kindly giving me £1 per episode release so far. That is astonishingly generous and I'm very grateful for that. I've also, of course, had some students donating fivers and apologising that it isn't more, which is also brilliant. No need to apologise because, of course, the people who can afford it pay for the ones who can't. If you can't afford anything at all, you can still get in touch at info@comedianscomedian.com. Request guests, tell me how you enjoy the show, just talk to me generally. It's great fun getting back to all my correspondents instead of bloody writing jokes for my new Edinburgh show. Or you can get in touch by tweeting at ComComPod. Do rate the show on iTunes if you haven't done already. I'd really appreciate that. And I think that's sort of it for now. Let's get stuck back in. Let's return to Andrew Maxwell.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When did you first take this personality of yours, this from as you say, like a sort of the Irish Arthur Daly neighbourhood? Yeah. When did you first take that onto a stage?
Well, I was a class clown, like straight out.
You know? Not surprise me.
Yeah. And I was lucky because the accident of my birth, being a Protestant in the north side of Dublin, which is extremely fucking rare. We only had one secondary school, which was extremely liberal. And rather than my class clowneriness and smart arseness, if I, any of the other schools on the north side, if I'd gone to, you know, mine was co-educational, still quite rare in Ireland. Mm-hmm. Most working class boys in the north side are raised in mono sex fucking situations. A lot of extremely fucking closet case, sadistic homosexuals, mm-hmm, educating children very badly. Okay. You know what I mean? But being small, and I'm not fruit. I always say fruity because it's funnier, but I'm just quite fey, you know? I'm not physically large. You know what I mean? And
you are kind of impish, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I would have been smashed the shit out of. I would have been beaten fuckless, like either by the teachers or other students. But because I luckily got to go to school where they were nice, you know, my teachers were like, oh, this fucker's funny.
Okay, you know, so like, do you feel supported then in the
orchestra? Oh, yeah.
Because it's quite an Irish sort of a trope, isn't it? That you've got the gift of the gab, or, you know, that you can...
Right, well, gab is just Irish for gob, which is mouth.
Yeah.
It's just Osqueilige, that's what a mouth is your gob.
Sure, okay.
So it's weird the way in English, there's that sort of thing of calling people with an Irish accent, he had an Irish brogue.
Okay.
Because that's fucking shoe.
That just means an accent.
Yeah, I know. But it's weird that that's become, because it is another one, it's, you know, other Irish word that's in English. You know?
Oh, is it? Okay, you that's
know?
A, right.
You know,
okay.
Oh, you've got a lovely Irish brogue. It's more, it's sort of for an older generation of English people. It's another one that it's sort of like gives me, it's one of those ones that gives me a warning sign. When somebody's been of an older generation who's English, but a bit polite, you know, if they ask you, where are you from in the Emerald Isle?
Yeah, sure.
You know, you're like, oh, you use colour, don't you? You know what I mean? It's not necessarily they're a bigot or anything, but it's just that, you know what I mean? Hello. And that's brogue fits into that.
Sure.
But it means shoe. How it became accent is...
I'm gonna ring a bell when you start getting off topic.
Smashing's another one, by the way.
Go on.
Smashing means smashing in Irish, but it's a smash in. Like it's... That's what it... You know what I mean? It's...
Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling.
Yeah, anyway.
Okay, so what I'm trying to do is I want to get a sense of... who you were when you started comedy. Do you feel like you're the same comedian now as you were when you started?
I feel like I'm the exact same. Yeah. I don't feel there's, you know, learned technique, you know, and with time I've learned a lot more discipline over my life, you know. I live a quite disciplined, largely sober life. Again, and that's
you were a bit of a, you were a hellraiser as
a
comedian.
I was the ultimate enfant terrible of this fucking festival. Like I did fucking Fred Macaulay show earlier, and I'm the only person who's done Fred show every year since he started doing it.
Okay.
And I could honestly say this was the first time this year that I've done it sober.
Okay. And it's a morning show, isn't it?
Yeah. Always just gone on the lash and then, ha ha, Fred. And all the old ladies in the crowd, which I always call coffin dodgers, or low flying angels.
That's nice.
Which they love. They love being reminded. Well, of you are. You're imminent mortality.
But you're incredibly charming, and you're one of those people. And I tell you what, in comedy,
I don't like the word charming because it's sort of a very backhanded compliment. I'm not saying that you're saying in that context, but there's a certain, you know what I mean. It's like the Chinese call, you know, charm is merely the smiling face of contempt. you know? There's something false about charm. You know what I mean? You know, like...
Well, what would you call it? Your ability to look at an old lady and call her a coffin dodger and make her laugh and fall in love with you. Whatever word you want to use for that.
I just feel like I'm alive. And, you know, and that's it. You know, well, for me, charm suggests there's a vested interest in your interest in somebody else, you know? You charm them into a sale.
To deceive them somehow,
You know, like the ghastly fucking men that read books about how to fuck women. Like, you know, that's what's called the game or... Ugh. Ghastly. So, like, I don't like to be in any way connected. I mean, I think, you know, in itself, I think charm is a perfectly fucking decent word, but like, it just feels like it's just.
Whatever the word you call it, that you do recognize there's more to you than your jokes. Your personality is just so kind of attractive to people.
Yeah, but
that you can rock up
way.
Hammered. No, yeah, well, not in a randy way. No, but you can rock up hammered and make old women fall in love with you. I don't mean that you're making them do that. I mean, there is something about you that means they would accept from you the sort of material, because you've got a twinkle or whatever it is, they'd accept from you the sort of material they might not accept from another comic.
Yeah, and that's sort of whatever that is, like, is beyond me. You know, it's not me, or it is me, but you know what I mean? It's not of my making. It was just in me. I mean, I was always the same. Like, I haven't worked on that. You know, I've worked on stage technique, the ability to write material briefer and, you know, work towards deadlines and all that sort of carry on. But like being able to do accents or just banter with punters, it's just, it's just being a natural glad hander, you know? My dad's a glad hander without having the punchlines.
Yeah, okay.
You know, you'll banter to any fucker. Like I just climbed Arthur's seat with my 12-year-old son and he didn't shut the fuck up all the way. Like,
where on earth?
Doctor fucking Who all the way. God, they love Doctor Who.
Okay, so listen.
But you know what I mean? So there's that side of it, you know? I don't know. Just at a very young age, I realized that we're all vulnerable and we're all going to die. And not in a morbid, gothy kind of way. It just seems self-evident to me. And, you know, so much of life is based around the suppression of that ultimate truth, you know? People standing in society. People fucking believe that there's all these things matter, but they don't mean fuck all. And I was just really little when I realized that. Mm. You know, it just occurred to me, like, I have two foster brothers. Well, I had three. AB, who I think you've met out in the mountains, my little brother.
Yes, I think I have. Yeah.
And obviously I introduced him as my brother and people are like, what the fuck, how's this big lump anyway genetically connected to you? But there was one either side of me. Johnny's a year older than AB. Andrew, it makes it all more confusing, is a year younger than me. And in quick order, both their parents died of cancer in really quick order when we were kids. And they were raised with us. And it was just sort of, just rather than making me feel, you know, obviously there was the sadness of their passing, but like just, I felt kind of liberated by it. Of just, this is, everything's so fucking fleeting. You know, it's just one vulnerable moment past the next. That's all our lives. And if you can, and when you feel that, you just feel a little bit more liberated. You know, I think punters will let me away with stuff because I won't talk about something unless I actually know quite a bit about it.
Yeah.
So if I'm ripping into you for believing in this, I have thought about it. You know what I mean? It's sort of like nobody... When I moved to England, I used to work in a supermarket. You know, I used to work at a Tesco's in Essex. And fuckers used to always tell me paddy jokes.
Yeah.
Where the punchline, everyone, is that the Irishman is congenitally fucking retarded. Right? Whereas, you know, which isn't true. Irish people are not congenitally retarded. We're congenitally vague and sneaky. That's a different fucking thing, you know? And I always was offended by that, but I've seen loads of comedians over the years do routines about Irish people. And, you know, it's, in brackets, offensive, but it's great because it's on the nose. It's true. You know, people will let you say anything to them as long as they feel there's a kernel of truth there.
Okay.
You know, so that's how you be, you know, that's where the trust is.
That's interesting because there is,
I also want nothing from anybody. Like, there's nothing I want. Like, I earn money, but it all goes to me, either my family or the fucking tax man. My idea of fun is smoking a joint out of a window. then I watch telly, you know, I read secondhand books. You know, I don't, you know, I like having a swim. You know, so I don't, I mean, I often feel like it's sort of a failing in my career, but I don't have it in me, you know?
What don't you have in you? What do you mean?
Well, a lot of the most successful comedians are just burning on the inside. They have a void that must be filled with the magic word success. But they can never fucking get there because there isn't an arena in the world big enough to fill the empty fucking hole in some of these men's souls. You know, maybe they were molested. Maybe they didn't know their dad. I don't fucking know. Whatever, you know, maybe they didn't have. I grew up happy. I still get on great with my family. I had a happy upbringing. So although I have a talent, I don't have that. Rah! I mean, hey, if a promoter goes to me here, listen, in this city, we think we can sell this room. Mm-hmm. Brilliant. Let's go. Bigger the better. Let's go as big as we think we can sell.
But sure.
That's nothing to do with me.
That's fascinating. That's so refreshing to hear someone approach it from that angle. Yeah.
Like, I'm not fucking bothered. Hey, listen, you know, like I said, you know, here's hoping Thursday night. Hopefully there'll be a decent number in the tent tonight, you know. But whatever the fuck's in the room, it's like, you know, you were slightly apologetic. Was this going to be a small crowd in here? I couldn't give a fuck. Like, in the healthiest sense of the word, you know.
Yeah.
Would the quality of these moments together still be improved or lessened by it being full or not?
Sure.
You know, you know what I mean?
So how hard do you work?
I like laughter. I just like the sound of it.
Yeah.
It sounds fucking great. And so many times you wonder in life, what is the point? What am I adding to life? What am I bringing to this? And it's so fucking fleeting. You know, so existence
with that,
is so brief.
With that in mind.
You know what I'm talking about, Stu. Sometimes you get a massive fucking laugh.
Yeah.
On stage. And the best ones are where it's something you had actually thought about or had a gag about. Somebody's heckled you. You hadn't planned to put that in the set. Somebody's heckled you. And next thing, this fucking sweet ball has come straight into the box. And you volleyed the fucker right into the back of the net. Everybody thinks you're a fucking genius. You're laughing at their laughter. And inside you're going, oh, I just fucking totally tricked it out there. So you're getting two funds for one fun.
So let's talk about how hard you work. How hard do you work? Because it seems to me like, and I'll say again, that it's such a refreshing thing to hear that you are happy with the level that you're at and that you're enjoying doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're happy to work hard, you know, in terms of performance and stuff, but you're not striving towards some idea that there's something better further away than actually making people laugh.
You know, but, I mean, there's that maximalism that is in our society of, you know, why do tits have to just keep getting bigger and bigger? You know, it's just, when's the third tit going to be added? You know, cars get bigger, houses, everything's just, you know, it's not.
Okay, I understand. I understand that, but I want to bring it back specifically to the writing, to the creation of material.
Yeah.
So how hard do you work writing your shows?
Not at all.
Okay.
I don't feel tortured in the fucking slightest.
Okay, but do you sit down and write out any of your material, or are you just used to saying stuff?
I have like a sheet of A4 that I will consult just before I go on stage tonight.
Okay.
Yeah? I work with Paul Byrne, who's Ed Byrne's younger brother, and he directs a lot of shows.
Mm-hmm.
He's sort of like my little brother as well. Paul's not here because he's got lymphoma.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Right. The first day of the festival, I'm driving up. And we've worked really closely on these shows together for years. Like, they're essentially a conversation between the two of us on a topic. And obviously, he's not on stage and the audience don't know that. Sure. But that's how
he's also really, in a fun way, very argumentative.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Probably a good person for pulling
those.
He's
good. He's good at just sort of, Paul's good at just going, well, if you're saying that there, what are you saying?
Yeah.
You know? Whereas to my mind, because I'm not really desiring to change the audience's opinion. I'm just saying is all, right? But that's deeply anti-intellectual, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And, you know, if we can make it a little bit, have a little bit more intellectual coherence, good. That adds a little bit of value to the show. It just adds something to it. And that's what Paul brings to it. And then Paul, you know, he had the test. He's a lump on his fucking neck. He also lives in my house. My children call him the house cat. he's my children's kind of unky, and you know, and I've been at him, you know, he's got a bird now, he's got a really nice bird actually, I saw the lump on his neck, and I was nagging him, and he got tested and da da da. Long story short, this Wednesday, the opening night of the festival, it turns out he's got lymphoma, so he's back down in London. So we've been sort of working on the show on Skype, but it's a conversation about where's that go?
And are you keeping notes throughout the year to then take on stage and talk about?
Or do
you
just talk about whatever's on your mind? In my iPhone, before it used to be a piece of paper and a pen, right? From the time I started working with Paul, which is about 10 years ago, right? I'd done stand-up for 10 years and I'd never taken a single note. I would just go on stage and what I remembered from the last time I'd try and say again, and the rest of it would just be fuck around with the people in the room.
If there's new comics listening to this, and I know some do listen to the podcast, not everyone can just do this. I mean, I think out of almost everyone, this is maybe 60 or 65 interviews I've done now. That's very, very unusual to hear someone go, just sort of walk on a busket.
Yeah, well, you know, I'd still remember.
Were you aware that the good bits, I wouldn't.
It's not like, you know, I just it was all in me.
Were you aware that around you, other comedians, your contemporaries, were working harder than that or writing harder than
Did
part of you think, I should maybe work a bit harder?
Not really, no. I can't explain it, you know. I don't know. I mean, it's sort of my career has been a case of friends of mine just going roaring past me, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, and
how does that feel? Are you okay with that?
I think the number one thing in life, I think for anybody, I think it could be expanded to anybody, but particularly if you're in show business, and I can only speak specifically for stand-up, you've got to have a way of being graceful. Yeah. You've got to have a way of allowing people around you to be successful and enjoy that for them. Yeah. Cause, fuck it, snakes and ladders, for fuck's sake. You know, and it's a 40-year run. You know, I start when I was 16, 17. Like, with luck, inshallah, I shall still be doing this in my 50s. Mm. You know, and along that time, some people will, you know, like, me and my boy, we're off to see World's End tomorrow during the day. Yeah. Like, I've known Simon and Nick since we were, like, in our early 20s, like. Mm. You know, Nick was just this fat waiter who was a mate of Simon's, and I used to just get stoned with him, and he was just this really funny dude. He used to make up little voices about, there was German squirrels at the end of the garden, and he just Nick would just make up this life of the German squirrels at the end of the garden while we were baked, you know. And then next thing's a fucking movie star, you know what I mean? And it's astonishing, but it's cool, you know. It's not a bad thing. I'm in two famous comedians' autobiographies. I mean, a brief mention, but like, who gives a fuck? That's a great thing. You know what I mean? I mean, there's loads of people. Me and Ed, my first year in the festival when I was 20, me and Ed and another Irish comedian, Ed Byrne, Kevin Hayes, another Irish guy, we did a combination show. Mm-hmm. I was 20, Ed was 21. Then Ed got all the girls and became the superstar. And, you know, I got some of the girls and just kept enjoying my life.
I am confident that the listenership of this show are going to play this conversation to themselves. They're going to save it for when they've had a bad gig and they're driving home afterwards, because they're so optimistic.
Yeah, but like, a bad gig's a bad gig. Don't get me wrong. I'm sensitive to it. You know, I want the audience to enjoy it and enjoy me and all the rest of it. And for whatever reason, that doesn't come off. Like, I did a late show here a couple of nights ago, and it was the
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.